Hello and welcome to Non-Breaking Space, which you can find online at nonbreakingspace.tv. Non-Breaking Space is a show where we'll seek out the best, brightest, and smartest folks on the web and talk about how and why they do what they do. Your hosts are Christopher Schmidt and Dave McFarlane, two web designers, authors, and trainers who have a passion for sharing knowledge about the web. I'm Chris from Canada, web designer, podcaster. Christopher and Dave have invited along to help push the record button and keep everyone on track here on Non-Breaking Space. Our guest for this episode is Chris Coyer. Chris is well known for his screencasts and tutorials at CSSTricks.com. Previously, he'd worked for Woohoo and SurveyMonkey. He's actually joining us for our 2012 year-end in review wrap-up spectacular super-duper episode. So I'll get right to it and pass it off to Christopher and Dave.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Hi, Christopher. It's going well. I just turned in my last chapter for my update to my CSS book. Woo! So I'm...
Wow.
Sort of free.
Dude, I thought you'd be like... Are you just super animated, or are you just super drained? Like, are you just like, how's that feel to be done?
Oh, well, I'm in the middle of doing this documentary, so I have that. I got to get it done this month, and then I'm going to your conference, and I'm doing a day-long, you know, thing. So I've got like all this stuff to do. So I'm not really feeling elated. I feel like, okay, I got that done. Now I'm moving on to these other two things get them done. But
okay, all right. Well, it sounds like you're busy. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I know it's a big achievement after doing like 10 of them or whatever myself, but yeah, it's totally.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm glad. It's never really done. You turn in the chapter and then there's one level of revisions and then there's another level and then, then it takes 2 months and then it comes out. So,
cool.
But anyway, I'm super excited. I wish we'd had him on earlier because then I could have asked him all these questions that I, had to figure out on my own for my book. But we've got Chris Coyer from CSS Tricks. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, guys.
Oh, and also from the fabulous Shop Talk Show podcast.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's the last time we had you on was the famous world-renowned Shop Talk Show crossover.
Oh, that's right. I was like, was that pre-Shop Talk Show? No, it was not. It was, we did a crossover.
Yeah. Awesome. That happened. That really happened. Yeah. 2012. So, one thing we didn't do in that show though was ask you how you got into the industry.
And we didn't go back in time.
No, we didn't go back in time. So you wouldn't mind just telling us like how
we
you
do that now?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. It's not super interesting. I think it's a pretty similar story to a lot of people. Like I was just going to college for computer science. Because I was kind of a computer nerd before that. I was like, going to college and picking a major was like kind of a non-choice because I was just grew up with computers and I was like, that seems like a good career and I liked computers and picking a computery major in college seemed like a good idea. So I did. That's far back enough, right? We don't need to cover like early childhood, I feel like.
No.
Were there any traumas that led you to web design?
No. Yeah. It was like a mechanical rabbit that was my friend. But computer science was like a really big major at the college I was at. It was like a lot of colleges are like renowned for one particular thing or something. Like, oh, it's a huge nursing school or whatever. That we were like a comp sci school kind of. I don't know what that means exactly, but it was kind of very serious there. There's a lot of people in it. But the classes were just awful. What I enjoyed about programming and stuff before that was simple stuff. Like, let's just make a little game. And we made it. And, we were writing in Turbo Pascal in high school. And I thought that was super cool. But we didn't touch on that at all in college. Right away, it was like assembly. And then that sucked. And I barely got through it. And then took classes and I kind of was avoiding comp sci classes. I was like, I'll take those later. and then it was a Java class and I just hated it and the teachers were boring and whatever. So I had by this time I had 4 years of comp sci under my belt. Needed to do a few more and then I was just gonna get out of there with my dumb little computer science degree. But I was kind of bummed out because I was like, God, now my whole life's gonna be this too. This thing that I'm not enjoying that I thought I would. And I was living with my friend Jeff, who was art and ceramics major, and he's always been like his life has had a very clear trajectory from day one. He's like, I like ceramics. I am going to spend every second of every day of my life in ceramics. And it's just been that way since like elementary school. And now he still does that to this day. And but anyway, like he was in, we were, you know, friends and always have been. And his life as an art student at college was like so much awesomer than my life. You know, he's like hanging out at with art chicks at art parties. And, you know, his life was like, you know, coming home from it, like the day to day was more open for him. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to go to the studio and work. You know, my art professors just know that the best thing they can do for me is just, you know, kind of let me do whatever I want. As long as I'm producing art, everything will be okay. You know, so his day was just go into the studio when I feel like it and get good grades. You know, I was like, oh, oh, your life is so much cooler than mine. And I was like way jealous of that, but I was into ceramics too, kind of. I wasn't ever as good as him or quite as passionate about it as he was, but I still liked it and I was still into it. And I was like, I'm just going to copy you essentially and I'm going to switch to ceramics too because I like it and I don't like where my life is headed with this comp sci degree. So I'm just going to see where it heads if I switch to art. So I ended up getting my college degree in ceramics as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was just a BA, not a BFA or anything, and I certainly didn't go get an MFA or anything. But yeah, that was it, and then I kind of graduated with that, kind of with like an oh crap kind of situation, you know, like your trajectory is a little more clear when you're comp sci, right? Like yeah, you're even courted for out of college. They're like, come work with us at Ameribank in or whatever. Is that a bank? Probably. And it was like it was even. You know, it was like updating code for the year 2000 switch or whatever. I mean, it was a little after that, but not long enough. I kind of figured that's what I was working on or would be working on. Anyway, my parents are both in the printing industry. So my stepdad owns a screen printing business, Madison, Wisconsin. And my mom sells printing for offset lithography places, you know, kind of a bunch of different ones, including now Park Printing in Verona, Wisconsin, who ended up printing my book, Digging into WordPress and stuff. Anyway, the printing industry has been a part of my life forever, you know, kind of like that's just what, you know, that's the shop talk around our house is print.
Right.
And so with some computer skills and with some art skills, I was able to get into pre-press after college just because it's kind of like anybody can learn how to do it. It's like technical computer work.
Yeah.
It's not programming. It's just like preparing documents to go on a press. So, you'll get a brochure from a designer. It's probably an InDesign or Quark or whatever. And you have to like kind of export make sure everything's in good order, make sure there's bleed, make sure there's all that stuff and then export it and lay it out in such a way that it will, you know, make sense on large press sheets and the things back up to what they need to back up to and all that stuff. And the end result of the pre-press's job is essentially plates at an offset place, you know, it prints C, Y, M, K. And then if it's a big six color press, it'll print like a wash or a varnish or whatever. And then like maybe a spot color it's like a company that has like a particular color that, can't really be replicated super well with CMYK. It needs to, you know, they have like American Family Red or whatever. I don't know. You know where I'm going with this. Anyway, it was years and years of
it was pre-press work. Ameribank.
Yeah. But I bounced around in pre-press, putting it like a year at like three different places, kind of doing pre-press work. And it was not great. It wasn't awful. You can nerd out it. It's kind of like real world CSS in a way. You use a computer, but like, you know, CSS is like, it's kind of creative, but it's not like design creative. It's a little different. It's like problem solving-y creative. Mm-hmm. And so you can really geek out on prepress. Like you can geek out on it as much as you can with CSS. And there's like new technology coming out all the time for it and stuff. But it still wasn't quite right for me. It wasn't like fun enough. You know, there's not a lot of creating with, it's kind of like just take what the designers gave you and make it work, son. So I was always, I was like behind the scenes, I was like building websites and screwing around. I was playing in a band at the time, a bluegrass band. And I was like, I'll make the website, you know, And that was kind of me finding WordPress was kind of like that was the magic, is you can just buy a domain name, buy some hosting, and chuck up this free bit of software, which will, you know, allow you to put a website up, but also kind of control the content on it. So WordPress was my first thing, you know.
Oh, that's where you started, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Totally. That was my first thing. And then in WordPress has never had table-based anything. Like from day one, WordPress was CSS-based themes.
Right.
And that was must have been a weird time. I'm not sure. I haven't heard too much about, you know, but it was probably at that time there were still quite a few people making table-based layouts. But I never did. So I know what people are talking about. I know I can, you know, I get it. You know, oh, the old days of table-based layouts. And I was, right. But I never really like did agency work or something where that's all we did.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of new school in that way. Never felt that pain. Anyway, and then it was just, you know, site after site after site. Once you kind of like are bitten by the bug of all I have to do is spend like $10 on a domain name, download some free software and chuck up something, I can make this website that kind of has unlimited potential and anybody in the world can see it. Now that's pretty like powerful moment. So it was all over from there. I was kind of just like learn, and then please somebody hire me as a web designer. I need to get out of pre-press. And my mom actually hooked it up. She's, you know, because she's in sales, she like, you know, knows everybody in creative agencies in town, and just was aware of when one particularly small agency was losing their web guy or one web guy. And then I went in there kind of like, you know, as green as could be, kind of like, look, I made a website for my band kind of thing. And they're like, that's good. That's fine. Cool. When can you start? You know? I was like, oh my God.
And so they were already, where did CSS Tricks come from?
It was right about that time. Cause it was trial by fire right at that moment. It was, we've already started on a couple of websites, but we have no idea. Like the owner to the business today is still not, he doesn't know web design. You know, he's just he basically works in Photoshop and InDesign, you know, and is a good designer, and he can think through problems, and he's a good business owner, and he's a good people person, and he's like the perfect guy to run this business. Doesn't write HTML or CSS, doesn't know web technology. And I didn't really either. You know, I knew how to make WordPress sites, but they're like promising stuff that they probably shouldn't have been promising at the time. And like, we'll make a ticket sales system for you, you know? And I was like, oh crap. So it was that time I was like working a ton and trying to learn how to build these sites. And I was like, I better, like, I'm so excited about it too. I was so grateful to have that opportunity. And I'm like, let's like blog it too, as I learn. So CSS Tricks and starting that job pretty much happened. Anyway, at the same time.
Cool. What year was that?
It was 2007. Oh. And it was also a weird time for blogs like that. I think I was just kind of thinking about this recently about how that was a pretty rough time for there was like a heyday of blogging about CSS, and it was before this.
Right.
And now it's kind of a heyday again. But during 2007, it was like not a great time to be blogging about CSS. It was like it was stagnant. Uh-huh. All the like really kind of cool, interesting things about CSS had kind of already been written, or so it was thought. So if you're blogging about it, it was beginnery. That would be about the only contribution you could make at that moment that was kind of any good. And I just had no idea because I was such a rube. You know, I just was like, whatever. I didn't even know it wasn't a good time to write about CSS. But now, kind of looking back on the history of it, it was a bit of a dark time. You know, like just being browsers not really innovating, just being stuck with old stuff. But I just, you know, I kept on writing about it, just not knowing any better. And it worked out pretty good. I was on the big web show, and Zeldman made a good point. It was kind of like there's a lot of Apple blogs, you know, like something like Daring Fireball has been around a long time. If Apple went the other way, if they just kind of died out instead of having this amazing resurgence that they had, that blog probably wouldn't exist. John Gruber would be doing something else, probably. Right. And it's similar, you know, not that my blog is anything like During Fireball, but it's similar. Like if the web didn't take off like it was,
right,
I was just in the right place at the right time, I guess, to have a blog about CSS.
Yeah, but I mean, you were just doing it because you liked to do it. I mean, it wasn't like you were looking at some kind of end of making a bunch of money or having a giant fan base. You were just thought these were interesting,
yes,
useful things to post, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't as altruistic as that. I mean, I had in my mind the entire time, wouldn't it be cool to make some money while blogging? Mm-hmm. It's not like every decision I made was based around, you know, trying to build an empire of web design or anything, but I definitely was influenced by stuff like Pro Blogger and, you know, got the guys that would blog about blogging and how they, you know, have made a career off of it. I'm like, that would be so cool.
Right.
So
right.
It was certainly born out of that spirit. Like, I like this, but also if I have an opportunity to make money off of it, I'm going to do it. And if I persevere, you know, that's how you get there.
Yeah. But I mean, you wouldn't have done it if you weren't really interested in writing about CSS, I assume.
Absolutely,
right?
And honestly, it wasn't even the only blog. It was a family of blogs when I first started CSS Tricks with a friend of mine, Jeff, where he was working at doing support for Adobe products, literally Acrobat and stuff. He would be on phone, so he would answer the phone, and it would be some distraught person that, like, you know, like the fonts didn't look right in their PDF or whatever, and right. he would help them out for like premium subscribers. I don't even know if there is a phone number anymore you can call for stuff like that. Maybe there is.
I think there is. You just have to pay a lot of money for it.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, and it's somebody like five levels above the person calling you paid that money. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever. He was in a unique position to know what people had problems with Adobe products. So we would have these websites like acrobathelp.com, and we'd post an article that was like, fonts don't look right in your PDF, try these steps or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just with the idea that if we just did a ton of this, it would show up in Google search results when people Googled this problem, and we could put some AdSense on there. And if we're not going to become millionaires, but these would eventually become little businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That was the idea. Then I was like, well, I'm going to do a CSS one too, because I already made all these templates so that we can kind of knock these sites out with WordPress pretty easily. And see, that was easily the least popular one, CSS Tricks, because it was more, I don't know, it never went anywhere. But then the rest of those kind of died out because it just sucked, you know, who wants to write about, you know, like Adobe Acrobat updated to 12.0.0.7 today, addressing these issues. And, you know, it just was like, he didn't really care. It was a play for money. It wasn't a play for passion, you know, even though passion is that word gets thrown around a lot in our industry. And
yeah,
it's kind of, I like it, but it's not like I wake up with fire in my eyes, you know. I wake up and I rub the
crap. You'd be like going to a hospital or something like that.
Yeah.
There's fire in my eyes.
Yeah.
What'd you put taco sauce in your bed?
I don't know.
That's right.
Yeah. I was passionate about hot sauces, and I was mixing ingredients in sleep.
Yeah.
And anyway, I liked writing about the CSS stuff. I could write an article about it, and even though it got no traffic, I'd be like, cool, I'm proud of that one. You know, like,
right.
That's gonna.
Yeah, but you also kept, you know, like, that's the thing, like you mentioned, like the Acrobat ones probably just died because no one cared about it. But now you cared about CSS, you know, like you thought it was cool, but you kept on doing it, right? Where the other ones were like,
yeah,
they just like no one really cared to like update it. But
they died, and there wasn't even like a moment in which we're like we're throwing in the towel publicly because nobody would have cared anyway. But.
Yeah.
But it just slowed down. It slowed down to the point where it wouldn't even get a post a week. You
right.
know, and then yeah. and then what are you doing at that point? You know, just
so was there a turning point for CSS Tricks where there was a point where you started to get all this traction? Was it a technical development, like changes in new browsers coming out, or was it more just people Googled and you started appearing everywhere?
It's been a slow burn. If you look at the analytics for CSS Tricks all the way from day one, which I've had Google Analytics on there from day one, so it's a pretty cool amount of data to have. It's a slow, there's very little bumps. It's just a straight line up to this day. Uh-huh. It's not a hockey stick. It's not a the mathematical curve where it starts growing faster.
Right.
It's not that. It's just
not an algorithmic straight line. Scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
or logarithmic.
Yeah. Is it? Whatever. The one where it goes whoop. No, there was a big, there was like a moment in which I got linked to by Smashing Magazine, which is, I think they're like at least a year older than CS Strix, if not 2 years. And they were bigger and have always have been much bigger. So like when I got linked to by them one time in the early days, I was pretty excited. I remember that kind of being a big moment because I'm like, oh, maybe I can make it. Maybe I do, you know, it validates not only traffic, but it validates that, oh, maybe I do have something to say in this industry that other people are willing to like yeah. link to something that I have to say. Which is cool. And then you start becoming aware of the community was starting to grow. I was starting to get aware of other people that were doing things like I was doing. And, you know, and things like, you know, guys like Dan Cederholm or whatever, we're just 100 miles away from. I never even thought like that was, they're a part of the community, but they're like, so, like a different community, like a right. bigger, higher up community. I was just, you know, so I was, you know, the community that was growing around CS Strix was smaller blogs, you know. I don't even have a good examples, but I started to feel more like, I don't know, we're all in this together or whatever. Like I can feel this swell growing. And then it's just, you know, day after day, week after week, month after month, publish. There's like thousands of articles on CS Strix, which is crazy, but it's just the way it is. It's been a much more slow burn than moment of validation.
But you are validated. And now, I mean, you're up there at the Google rankings. If you just do things like linear gradient, you're like, you know, right there, you know, right near W3 schools.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is
amazing because they're number one on almost anything you Google related to CSS.
I never see that anymore because I blocked them because of their jerkiness. So you can, you know, well,
you can
whatever.
Do that.
Yeah, yeah.
On your search results, knock show out me. A site.
Oh, yeah. You can just say, "Don't never show me anything from this site." And then it was proved that they're even jerkier than we thought because they now have a wildcard subdomain and internally linked to it randomly, right. so that it'll be like www.4w's. So it'll start showing up in your results again because Google thinks of that as a different domain. You're like, oh, come on.
Oh, wow. That's weak.
Yeah, you'd think they would be penalized for stuff like that. But they're just so big. Their Google rankings are so high that I don't think anything can
knock them off.
Yeah, it's kind of too late.
Who are you know, they? Anybody know who they are?
Nobody knows. That's another weird thing about it.
I think maybe it's Donald Trump's behind it.
Yeah, it's not all bad because people do learn from it, and I am about learning. It's just, you know, it's just the shady techniques and the, you know, questionable information sometimes, and the fact that their name tries to imply that they're, you know, part of the W3C, which they're not, and they offer these certifications which are like right. worse than useless. You know, it's all that together ends up, you know, it's kind of a bad taste of it.
Yeah, definitely. So here we are in 2012. And at the end of the year, what was your 2012 like?
It was pretty rad, I'd say.
You had a lot of changes. You left.
The year in review for me was, at the beginning of the year, I was at SurveyMonkey. Right. So, because it was post the sale of Wufoo. So we all moved as a team of guys who are working on Wufoo.com to come out to California and work for... Is that really? Oh my gosh! This year went so fast. Yeah. Anyway, I was at SurveyMonkey in January through like April. Mm-hmm. The sale actually happened in April, and I had a year to like vest or whatever. I'm pretty sure I can say that it's not like 100% vest, but you know we got some fake stock or whatever because we weren't stock at the time, but now we are or something. I don't even understand it all. But if I left before that, all that would have went away, which would have been kind of stupid. Anyway, it was, and I wasn't itching to leave anyway. I liked working at SurveyMonkey. it's a huge app, you know? So it was fun to work at WooFoo, but it's sometimes working on things at scale is kind of addictive because you're like, wow, these little changes I make are going to go out to, you know, just a huge number of people, which is kind of, what's kind of neat. So I liked it there, but towards the end of it, I was kind of like, you know, it's time to, I have other ideas. I need to simplify professionally. I kind of stole that phrase from Jason Santa Maria. Just posted that he was, you know, I don't know, so a week or two ago, he's leaving Typekit, and he had that phrase in his blog post. He's just like, I just need to simplify myself,
right,
professionally. And I was like, I like that. I feel so good after having done it. Now that my professionally for me, it's like I have this like triangle of stuff. I do CSS Tricks, I do Shop Talk Show, and I do CodePen. That's it. That's Chris Coyer. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. And it feels good to have that like simple of an explanation these days. What do you do? These three things.
So you launched Shop Talk Show in 2012, right? And CodePen came out this year too, huh?
Yes. Gosh, wow. So those are the two of the three things that I now self-identify with, I guess, happened this year. That's pretty cool. I wonder what the dates are. It's funny. I don't know.
So tell us a little bit about CodePen. I don't know if everybody that listens to our podcast knows what it is or how it works.
Yeah, let's see. I don't know what happened. I have chriscoyer.net/about because I'm so dumb at it's just remembering this kind of thing. Like, when did I graduate high school? I'm like, I cannot remember. I mean, that's one that you know because it comes up in life a lot. But these kind of things, like, when did you start at WooFoo? Like, I would have been like, I don't know. I have no idea. In the before time? So I keep this page to write these dates down so I can refer to it. But anyway, yes, CodePen was launched this year, apparently. I need to put it on this calendar so I can remember it. But it was born out of this. So if I can describe what it is in 2 seconds, it's kind of like a lot of people that listen to this podcast has probably seen JS Fiddle. If you haven't, you just go to the page and there's four big boxes on the screen. One of them is HTML, one of them is CSS, one of them is JavaScript, and one of them is the result of those three things kind of squished together. And I give them all the credit in the world for innovating that kind of approach to sharing code. It's smart and cool, and I like it, and I still like it, and good work, guys. But I was thinking, like all these demos on CSS Tricks, 5+ years of demos. I wish every single one of those demos was on JS Fiddle, because that would be, it's just such a more compelling way to view these demos. Not only can you see what the result of the demo was, but you don't have to like view source and stuff. You can just see the code right on the same page. It's awesome. And I was like, I could move them all to JS Fiddle, but think of all that traffic I'm losing. You know, I'm not afraid to say that would not be smart for me to put to send all that traffic to them. It's not even just traffic, but like, what if they go away, or what if they make some decision that I don't like? You know, that it would be kind of stupid for a project the scale of CSS Tricks to link all the demos to something like JS Fiddle. So I'm like, maybe I can recreate it. And maybe I can even do a better job, and I'll put it on CSS Tricks, and I'll show all my demos with that. And so I have some friends that were looking at just kind of wanting to do a project and stuff. So I was like, hey, guys, let's work on this. And they were all about it. And it just kind of morphed over time. Instead of being this thing that we're going to install on CSS Tricks, it became like, well, hey, why don't we buy a domain name and put it on it? And so instead of having it be this thing that anybody can install, there'll be this like one install of it. Kind of a resource. And then we're like, well, how do we find out? Wouldn't it be nice to know, like, how do we find out what the coolest things that people are building on this thing every day? Like, should we just make an admin screen that just has a list of them and we can just click through and just see? You know, like, that'd be kind of cool, because I want to know. I want to know, as the builder of this app, what are people building with it that are cool? Because the idea was already that instead of just me making demos, anybody could make a demo.
Right.
And then that screen was like, well, why don't we just make a little iframe you know, like a grid of iframes. So not only do we don't have to just click through them, we can just look and just see, are these things interesting? And then we're like, well, you already have to log in to make a new demo. And we already have this like grid of iframes going on. Why don't we just chuck some social features around that as well? Like you can follow each other. You can heart pens so that you can remember them for later. You can comment on them, all this stuff. Like, okay, we'll just throw a social layer around it. And that's looking a lot like Dribbble then. So
right.
You go to dribbble.com, you see this grid of things that other designers have made. You can follow other designers, you can like them, you can comment. It's a social layer around screenshots where we kind of just through happenstance ended up with this social layer around bits of code. So, you know, without, you know, just as an easy way for people to understand what we do right away, I say it's kind of like a combination of JS Fiddle and Dribbble.
Yeah, and it's awesome. I mean, I'm looking at the homepage now, and you know, you've got this editor's pick. So you've I guess that's you and maybe the people you work with have picked ones that are particularly awesome. Like I love this pure CSS comics boxes, so you can create CSS based little, you know, talk bubbles and things like that. That's awesome. The CSS panel menu is really cool.
Yeah, that was a demo from my own site that I just blogged about that this guy like improved. Anyway, he just made it better. So I'm like, I'm going to feature his because I like his. He did a good job on that. Right. And so now this becomes not only like what are cool things that people have built, but this is a very real design pattern. So if I can just describe it, it's called the CSS panel menu. There's the big header at the top. And then there's one of those little three line navicons, as people are calling them. And you click it and it reveals navigation from the left. So it's an off canvas navigation thing. Like on small screens, navigation can be take up too much room sometimes, and to just reveal navigation with some kind of click is kind of a nice pattern these days. So instead of using JavaScript to do it, this is a CSS version of a pretty new JavaScript one out there, and it's just nice. So instead of you need this on some project, you just know that you can come to CodePen and find it. And not only that, is you can find related thing, you know, through tagging and search, you can find out other examples like this. So it's not just sharing. It's not a one-way thing. It's like there's so much content on here. If you can go under tags and look at thing, you know, just look at tags/buttons and just find tons of different buttons, and not only just the design of them, but literally the code that builds them. So it's inspiration as well as just, you know, come here and snag some code, you know, go for it. Yeah. This is an open sharing environment. It's teaching, you know, I can learn from the code that other people have posted here. And it has all that social stuff as well, kind of validation.
And so this is for CSS, HTML, JavaScript, right?
Right.
And all the front end stuff.
Exactly. There's no back end. There's no PHP or Ruby or anything, but there is all the preprocessors. So if you want to write that HTML in HAML, you can, or Markdown or Stylus or whatever. And in CSS, it's less, or Sass or Stylus. And in JavaScript, not only can you load in any external library that you want or just easily pick MooTools or jQuery or whatever, but you can also write in CoffeeScript if you want. So it does have those abilities. Because I want it to feel comfortable. I want it to – the editor – which is a very nice editor, by the way, if you ask me. It has kind of all the comforts of home of writing code in Sublime Text 2 or something. Most of what you can do in Sublime Text 2 works right in the little editor here. Tab triggers, you know, being able to block indent code or auto-close tags and stuff like that. And even in the CSS panel, there's even things that are above and beyond that. Like you're hovering over a hex code, you can hit the option key and get a color picker to grab a color out of, which is, you know, which is pretty neat.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. So did you guys homebrew this, or are you using some open source editor?
The editor is called Code Mirror, but it's been heavily customized by us. So it's Code Mirror Plus, you know, which a lot of the stuff we hope to kind of upstream to them if they want it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like if you're in the HTML area, just type like lorem tab and you'll get like a lorem ipsum paragraph, or type like a nav tab, you'll get a stubbed out navigation. So it's for building stuff really quickly, you know, we hope to make it a very nice, you know, a compelling code editor to use. Just, you know, have it feel comfortable. I'm not even sure where I was going with that, but it's pretty sweet.
Fun. That's cool.
It just evolved to what it is. So that's CodePen, and there's a lot coming on it. I work every single day on this thing. It wasn't just like, oh, we did it, we're done. See you later, guys. There's a team of three guys: Alex Vasquez, Tim Sabat, and me. And we're all not to make this a big podcast pitch or whatever, but we're like going all in on this thing. There's a lot we can do. And mm-hmm. for example, collaboration mode's coming out. So if you're playing around with the pen right now, just send me the URL to it and we can play together.
Oh, cool. That's great.
Yeah. And there's like a professor view mode thing. Hopefully this stuff will be out pretty soon. There's more than this. I gotta keep some of it a secret just because there actually is a few competitors that kind of follow in our footsteps here. And live view, I think JS Bin has this now. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it's kind of like Adobe Edge Inspect or whatever. Open up this URL on 10 different devices, and then as you type in the CodePen editor, it's updating any URL or any device you have that URL open on. So you can open it on your phone and your iPad and your Kindle or whatever. And as you type background red, you know, that propagates to all the other devices instantly. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mobile test. It's pretty neat. And those are the kind of things that are going to be pro features here sooner than later. And that's where the business model comes in here. So I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to build the biggest new startup in the world, but we are trying to make a business out of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, this is awesome. This is so cool. So someone could write in SAS, for example, mm-hmm. but you can also... Once they, you can see their SAS code, but you can also see just the completely, processed plain CSS, right?
You can, and it's a little bit of a hidden feature.
You have to click on the CSS button or the CSS.
Yeah, we'll show you the compiled. We could probably make that a little more obvious, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't have any super.
Discovered it and I've only been looking at it for a minute, so it's not that. Mm-hmm.
That's what adds to the learning aspect of it. And we have some things coming out that will help with learning as well. But it's probably the easiest thing out there right now as far as learning the syntax of a preprocessor. And I use it all the time to figure out what the heck CoffeeScript is doing, because that one's stranger to me. It's a little easier to imagine in your head what SAS is going to do.
Right.
But CoffeeScript is its own weird, wild world. So if you're trying to learn CoffeeScript, you can come to CodePen and start typing little things that you learn, and then just click on JS, and it will show you what it compiles down into.
Right. Yeah. Cool. That's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Inspiration.
You showed me like the early kind of beta at the In Control conference in February, but this has really come a huge way. It's really cool.
Yeah, thanks. Then it's we're just getting started. So.
Lots more to come.
Well, maybe we could... We asked some web luminaries about 2012 and about our industry and what they thought about the evolution of the web field in 2012. And they gave us audio clips. So we're going to listen to a couple of those and maybe talk about them. Our first one I think we have up is Aaron Walter, who's the design lead at MailChimp. Is that right?
Right. Yep. Yeah. And he was going to tell us what he thought about the industry in this past year.
In 2012... an interesting thing happened. I stopped relying on local storage and moved pretty much everything to some kind of a service. I don't use my iTunes library that much anymore, even though I've invested so much time and energy into organizing it. I use Ardio because it's just so much easier to find new music and find stuff that I wouldn't normally discover. I use stuff like Gmail, I use Dropbox, I use iCloud. I use so many different services that my computer, this tiny little MacBook Air, is able to get smaller and thinner and more powerful and just connect to all of these services that make my life so much easier. I had a computer die on me just a few hours before a big presentation. But I was still able to cobble together that presentation, to retrieve it and give the presentation without any trouble, because I'd stored my files on Dropbox and iCloud, and I had the different resources to be able to pull those together. And when I got my new laptop, it was so easy to connect to all of the content and services that I've been using for over a year and have a new machine up and running really quickly. I think that's just going to become more and more of a trend. Services are going to be the center of our lives, and we're going to be subscribed to the hilt. I know I am right now, between cell phone service, data services, subscriptions to various content sources. There's a lot of subscribing, a lot of monthly fees, and I think that sooner or later we're all going to feel a little bit of a backlash. But I do think that our content is a lot safer and our life is a lot easier and more portable when we rely on all these great services. I love that about 2012. I think we'll have more of it in the coming year.
Cool. So that's Aaron Walter. And Chris, you and Dave Rupert did something on Shop Talk Show where you were kind of talking similarly about web services that you guys use.
Yeah. Oh, I think Aaron's right on. I'm the same way. I basically have I've forced myself into a thin client. I keep almost nothing other than, some of the software that just by necessity has to run, like the Creative Suite and my text editor, which I hope that's the very next thing that starts becoming web-based,
right.
Which looks good with brackets. It's pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. I haven't moved to it yet. But, there's just a few things that just kind of have to run or is very nice to run as native apps. But data-wise, I'm almost 100% in Dropbox and then just GitHub, So if my computer were to die, just like it happened to Aaron, I would just actually have a backup computer just because I'm such a nerd that I can't deal with the one day it would take me to go.
Right.
I would just open up the other one, Git clone, blah, bundle install, Rails server, done, or whatever to work on the stuff. It just even development environments are easy to get set up these days.
Right. It's true.
I like it. It's a good trend. And he extended the point to talk about how we're going to start. Maybe there'll be some backlash as far as oh my God, look at all this money that I pay monthly. But, I don't know.
I feel like it's somewhat of a good trade-off because you have all this physical stuff just hanging around your house or in your office. Just I got all these CDs or, DVDs or Blu-rays now or whatever.
Wow.
Or I still have floating around like old versions of CS, just saying, which I kind of like because I know Adobe CS 6 is all subscription model and I love it, but just to be asked every time I open up an Illustrator or something like that, just like, hey, you need to log in and make sure that you're really using this. I find that totally annoying. So if I was on a plane or somewhere there they didn't have internet access and
it won't even start. It won't even start.
Yeah, it will say hey, you need to sign up for it. It's crazy.
You can't work offline with that?
You can if it knows that you've been working on it for a while, but every month or so it'll just come up and say hey, are you sure you're using this, right? You need to sign in and give us the okay that you're using it. So
if that happened to happen on a plane ride, you wouldn't be able to
it. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to joke it. Unless you had that Wi-Fi, the really kind of cruddy Wi-Fi that you have on some of the things.
That stinks.
Yeah, so that's the only bad part about it. But, I think they'll get better with the next iteration probably with that because I feel like it's not the optimum. But, still, there's a little trade-off. I don't really have to have, all this physical stuff in my home office. I can just my dream is to get rid of all this paperwork on my desk. And just not to deal with him.
I feel great satisfaction every time I toss something or sell something. I'm not a super minimalist or whatever. I'm not I gotta get rid of all this stuff. It's burying me. But anything that comes with any kind of attached mental weight, I feel very good about getting rid of. So I don't have a lot of stuff in my house that is unnecessary. And it feels good. And it feels especially good on the computer.
So, do you ever feel? Are you ever afraid that these services are going to, end? Dropbox might just get sold to Microsoft, or they might just close shop for one reason or another.
I think it's more dangerous, the security, you know, like if they're like, I don't know. If they sold, big deal, you know. It's not, they're not going to shut down the next day, and if they do, right, somebody else is going to pick it up, because that's the nature of you know, startups and whatever. Sure. I'm surprised that Dropbox is independent, honestly. I'm shocked that they haven't sold.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, Microsoft just came out with their SkyDrive. Is that what it's called? I don't know. So, I was kind of concerned about them because, I feel like, a lot of Microsoft users will just, drop them for the Microsoft's own solution. Mm-hmm. So
I would use Google Drive. That's, before I use SkyDrive or whatever, but that's just because I'm more Googly than I am Microsofty. But that's pretty good. It's surprising that Apple doesn't have anything like that. That's what it seems tailor-made for, is for Apple to have bought Dropbox, because it works so super well, and iCloud is so confusing and weird.
Yeah. Right. Well, like, there was a time when there was an article not too long ago, I guess it was after Steve Jobs passing, everyone was coming out with their Steve Jobs story, and I think it was about this time that the Dropbox founder told his Steve Jobs story, and Steve Jobs wanted to talk to Dropbox and say, hey, blah, blah, blah. And so they were worried about, one of the couple things I got from the story is, like, he was worried that Steve Jobs would come in and see how they had their whole setup. So they went off site so that, exactly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so, but Steve Jobs is like, hey, you guys are a feature. You're not you don't have anything unique that can't be copied, per se. And so, or something like that. So, like, when you just, basically, I'm not sure if it says in the article, but I think there was overtures that Apple really wanted to buy them and take care of it, but they went independent. They said, no. And so there, I think there was an opportunity for them to be bought, but they just, they turned it down. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree. I think it would be awesome just to have it in there because, the iCloud stuff with Apple, I don't think it's
like when you open a keynote or like that somebody sends you and then you close it. In order to what would be just cancel, I don't want to save it. I didn't make any changes. You have to click a button that's called delete.
Yeah.
You ever seen that? You're like, no, I don't want to delete it. I want to close it. There's no just close it button, because it's already in iCloud land or whatever. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a little thing, but still. Anyway, good thoughts, Aaron. I'm on board.
Well, our next one, thought for the year is from Greg Story. He's a president of Happy Cog in Austin.
Hey guys, it's Greg from Happy Cog. Thanks for having me on the show. I've got a couple of thoughts to share with Non-Breaking Space listeners. First is a reflection of 2012, and I'd say the big event for us has been the change that we've made in our design and our development process. More so on the design side, we decided to take user experience and wrap it into our overall design philosophy rather than make it a distinct phase within a project. This year, we ditched wireframes and have experimented with various types of prototypes on different devices and formats. And after looking at this over a year, I'd say we've seen some remarkable and some measurable improvements. First is we've gained a lot of efficiency by thinking both of user experience and design and how that's going to impact development. These things used to just be a waterfall, one right after another, and now we're doing all three at the same time. More importantly, the clients they love this, that their response to this has been phenomenal. They're much, much more engaged because they have something to click on, something to point to, something to move, something to resize. And as a result of this, they're able to provide the feedback that we've been looking for, wanting for a long time. And we're able to get them to be, much, much more verbose, and engage right from the start. Every time that we go to show them work, they're clicking on things, they're moving things around. And that's been wonderful. And I don't see us going back anytime soon. Looking forward to 2013. First, this is more for, say, shop owners and freelancers or just maybe people thinking about going into freelance. But from what I've seen, and this is knock on wood, you know, don't take my word for it, but from what I've seen and talking to a couple other shop owners, business is strong. Business seems to be back to levels that we saw before the recession. There's always been an uptick in business, you know, from year to year, and you've seen my team grow, Happy Cog grow overall over the last two or three, 4 years. But this feels different. It feels good. It feels optimistic. And I am not going to go into this new year thinking that we're done, we're through. But it sure feels better than any other year I've had since 2009. And that's pretty exciting. And I know that we're not alone. I hope that everybody listening in, if you're running a shop, if you're a freelancer, you're experiencing the same thing. But it feels like maybe that's not going to be as much of an issue as a lot of us have had to deal with over the years. Final thought for everybody, if you're a designer, developer, if you make things on the web, is mobile. I don't have enough time to talk about this in detail, but at Happy Cog, we are going to continue to invest heavily in mobile and devices in a really big way through education, continuing education with our people, research, and acquiring devices and just staying on top of what's going on out there with devices. By the end of this year, everybody at Happy Cog will have an iPad mini. And we're doing that so that everybody is aware of how users, and we're going to have millions and billions more users engaging the internet through devices like this that will never likely sit in front of a PC. And so we're really putting a strong emphasis on making sure that not only are we on top of what's going on, but we're able to take some of our leadership position and extend that into this area and try to help and support the community. The final thought that I have on mobile is that I'm really hoping we can find a different word or just stop calling it mobile and just accept that the new norm is that the web is on everything now. And when we go to make sites, we're not thinking of just a person sitting in front of a computer. Well, that's it. Thanks again, and have happy holidays and a happy new year.
All right. Thanks, Greg. That was a lot of good stuff. I think probably for a lot of people listening, maybe the best news is that his experience is the economy is picking up, that there's a lot of work for design agencies and probably for freelancers as well. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I think the you know, buying iPad minis for everyone is pretty sweet. So that's pretty nice. But yeah,
I would hope the kind of people that they hire at Happy Cog are pretty aware that there's websites on phones.
One would hope, definitely.
But it's still awesome. It's probably more than that. It's also like, hey, we like you. Continue to work here.
Yeah, well, I think it's also just good. Like, you know, if they are in a client situation, they could just really pull up their website and like show other examples really quick and
right,
like a demo piece, you know.
Right. And especially if that's a big part of your work to, you know, because then all of a sudden then it's like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You should spend your paychecks on mobile devices thing, which is weird, you know, like if this is what we do, then maybe we should give you the thing that you need to do the thing.
To do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Chris, how's mobile affected you this year?
I'm mostly embarrassed by it because one of the biggest things that I spend so much time on CodePen has a very weak mobile experience right now. Yeah. And it's not that I have no ideas of what to do about that, but I've yet to have this moment of clarity where I know so exactly what to do, I'm just going to stay up all night and do it kind of thing. I don't see it yet, exactly the perfect thing for CodePen on mobile, but it has to happen. It just has to. It has to, because people share the stuff on, you know, it's not, if it was just me and it was just this thing where I could say, hey, no, CodePen is a desktop app. People only want to code on desktop apps. That might be true. You know, maybe we'll make the editor only that way, or you just have to Zoom or whatever. But the things that people might conceivably share, need to be more mobile friendly. So yeah.
Well,
so
CSS and tricks, certainly yeah. you'd want to preview, you know, these pens in a mobile device. So I mean, that would be, you know, beneficial for people to, even if they're not going to edit, to be able to see how that pen works on their phone, on their iPad, on their Android device.
Totally. And that's what that live view is all about. And actually, I was working on some stuff last night that's going to help you. That's going to help you specifically with that. So, but yeah, yeah. CSS Tricks went the responsive design route. That was another big thing that happened to me in 2012, was the redesign of CSS Tricks. And
yeah.
Like the last design or two, it is responsive again. It's responsive in the easiest possible way, I'd say. So I didn't break any new ground with responsive design. It's largely a 2 or 3 column design that just squishes down into 1 column. So I didn't break any new ground with off-canvas layouts or I'm not even conditionally loading any content specifically mm-hmm. for one size or another. It's just very, very simple. It just kind of squishes down. So mobile's a part of that. I do feel like it's better. CSS Tricks is slightly better experience that I took the trouble to do that.
Right.
I don't know if it's like twice as good or whatever. I just this morning I was looking at, there's a, you know, speaking of sites that were kind of part of the community as I was growing up with CSS Tricks, one was Spoon Graphics, blog.spoongraphics.co.uk. Chris Spooner has had that site for a long, long time.
Right, right.
He just redesigned it, and he chose not to make it responsive. Very specifically, it's a pretty simple site. It probably wouldn't be that difficult to make responsive. You know, just change a few things to percentages and throw a media query in there. He's certainly capable of making it responsive, but there's, in his blog post announcing the redesign, there's some reasons why he chose specifically not to do that. And I can't say I totally disagree. And I'm not trying to discount responsive design. I'm a big fan, actually. But for a site that's kind of as simple as his, the slightly zoomed out view is it's kind of okay.
Right, yeah.
Anyway. I don't know what else I have to say about that. Yeah, what most the year like for mobile for me, it was just, I don't know, keep you know, just watching, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of at a funny, we're not at an endpoint yet. There's so much to be worked out. I mean, just responsive images, for example. I mean, you've talked about that a ton, and you know, we're not anywhere near a solution for that, and that's still a sticking point for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I think also the main thing is, not one of the main things, but a key point is that, you know, I grew up around computers and I'm familiar with computers. You know, I'm okay typing now after writing 10 books or whatever on the keyboard. But there's people who will never have, who've never had that experience. And their only experience with a computer is going to be touch screen with a phone or maybe an iPad. And that's how they're going to experience our websites.
Yeah.
Our app sites from now on. And that just kind of blows my mind that, you know.
That's all they've ever known.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and whatever happens in the future, you know, like, you know, it could be different. Like, you know, it's all sponges or something like that. I don't know, whatever. But like right now, it's just like they're just typing on glass with their thumbs, you know, so it's kind of weird just to think about, like, and it's totally mobile and they're totally, you know, wherever they want to be, how are they interacting with it. And so they're not like chained to a desktop or desk or whatever to make it happen. So all these, you know, and I think a little bit of the kind of web design cliches that we have, like, you know, maybe, I don't know, just little things like, you know, they're about to get rid of, like the, was it nav icon? We talked like menu icon or whatever. Yeah. Like that's totally new. Like, it's totally different. Like, you know, that doesn't really have a really great place in a desktop, you know, website per se, but it's, you know, it's gonna be, it's gonna be a new language for mobile that is gonna probably feed back into desktop design, and if, you know, mobile design is gonna be driving a lot of the stuff that we do that we used to do like for desktop. So it's a kind of
absolutely. If you're gonna start a new web app in 2013,
yeah.
I would go mobile first. I would definitely, you know, if we're gonna start WooFoo over in 2013, it would certainly be you know, like probably think of a tablet first, probably, because it's kind of more of a do worky kind of thing. Yeah. And not to ignore the desktop, because I bet still in 2013, you're still going to get more traffic from a desktop site, especially for anything that's, I don't know, developer-y or for something like a Woofoo or whatever. But to be smart for the future, you know, start, make it work on the tablet, and then adjust the desktop experience accordingly. That would definitely be the right thing to do.
Yeah, totally. So speaking of the future in 2013, Chris, what do you see as some of the big developments next year?
For what specifically? Just anything?
Well, just in terms of design, web design, our you know, maybe some CSS things. Like, do you see anything in 2013 that's going to like, wow, we're going to start doing this thing now because browsers support it? Or
yeah, God, I saw a tweet. Who was that? It was interesting. I think it was I think Paul Irish retweeted it, and I was like, wow, that's a good point. I wonder if I can find it. But it was kind of like between WebGL and all these different technologies that are coming out within a few years, the web might be, some of the stuff that is being built might be just the web might just be indecipherable. It might be just look nothing like the current web, you know. I think is pretty interesting, and that I don't know if that's going to happen in 2013, but I like to think that all this, you know, that there's like, you know, we're not going to be like, the web isn't going to be exactly the same for 10 years, you know. We probably, you know, I don't know, won't be making div tags forever. Not that there's anything wrong with div tags, but I'm not sure where I was going with that. Yeah, there's plenty to be excited about. Even I think the rate of change is more exciting than any particular change.
Mm-hmm, right.
That all of a sudden we're talking about Flexbox or something. You know, we even talked about that a little bit before the show, and it's like, yeah, that's some pretty exciting stuff. Flexbox is going to be a big deal especially for app like design and a site like CodePen, for example, that is just more, it's broken up into little chunks. Or imagine what like mail.app looks like with there's the list of messages on the left and then kind of an individual message on the right, and they both sort of scroll independently, and there's like a bar of actions on the top, but like if you resize the screen, that bar of action stays on the top, but maybe there's a bar of actions on the bottom too. It just stays kind of fixed to the bottom, in those other scroll areas kind of just change size, like, you know, it's just kind of a flexible grid thing that's a little different. That's more web appy feeling than website-y feeling, and those there's a divide there that's going to stick around, I think, and Flexbox is going to help a ton with that web appy type of layout. And I'm kind of getting this from a video by Simurai or whatever, who kind of put a point on this in a good way that I'll send you that link. We can throw it in the show notes or whatever. He kind of designed a little mail app and really kind of drove this point home of how like crazy awesome Flexbox is going to be for that. But it's brand new. Maybe a couple of years ago, we were like, oh, cool, Gradients. When can we use that? 2050 or something? And that was like, ha, 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 ha. That would get a big joke on stage because we're all like, yeah, CSS or, you know, this stuff moves so slow, we'll never be able to use anything cool. That attitude in like a year is really starting to go away. People are like, browsers move super fast. Even IE is moving a lot faster now and is pushing out mandatory updates. And Firefox is moving super quick, and Chrome certainly is moving super quick. And hopefully we can get, you know, the Safari team jealous enough that they'll start pushing faster. And then now we're talking about, even though with a complete change in how Flexbox is working, a different syntax, literally, we're thinking like a year to like real prime time usage in some situations,
right?
You know,
right.
And that was just, that attitude is super exciting. You know, like we can talk about some new thing, some new JavaScript API or something. We can start playing with it. Like the day you hear about it, it's probably shipping in Canary. You know, like that's how fast stuff is. It's not some theoretical thing that we discuss and then way later there's an implementation of it. Like these days, by the time you hear about it, it's probably in Canary.
Right. It's probably not too far off before we'll be talking about the bad old days of float-based layouts.
Yeah. Oh, right.
You do? Totally. You floated? Oh, man. Oh, jeez.
We really, float is going to go away. Float is going to be for floating images and wrapping text around it a little bit once in a while. It'll be like an esoteric thing that the children of today learn. They'll be like, oh, float, cute. Yeah. Let's make websites retro.
What's the use case for float?
Yeah. Because there really will be, because to make a grid these days, you'll just flexbox it.
Yeah.
It'll, and it's so easy. You just literally you have a container called like grid or whatever, and you say that is display flex. And then as many divs that are direct children of it, mm-hmm. and it doesn't even have to be a div, it can be whatever, sections, a size, those are forcibly turned into flex items.
Wow.
So they'll just without applying any other properties at all, and you can control this granularly if you want to, but by all you have to do is set that one thing, and then they're all just equal height or they're equal width columns.
Right.
Automatically. Well, and
I like how you can order them. So
right.
source order is not going to be
yep.
An impediment to how you do your layout anymore, yeah. which is awesome.
So you would put the main content area first for yeah. accessibility, right? And then your side would be after that. And even if your design warrants that sidebar being on the left, that's one line of CSS that you have to write. Just flip-flop them. Now, it's kind of possible with floats because you would just float one to the left, but that gets more complicated with multiple things and
right.
You it got, just I mean, is you more can do brain it,
but
you've
got to yeah. add some extra code to make it happen.
Yeah, and not even like you can do it in like really simple designs, but I don't know. It gets harder. There's certain it's hard to talk about this stuff in the completely abstract, but that's exciting. But the rate of change, man, things are just coming, and it's good. And so now, and then there's less talk about how we do things and limitations and kind of like bummer talk like that. And there's a lot more conversations happening about just the philosophy of design itself. How can we help users? What are good ideas? How do we build apps that people want? And, mm-hmm. there's a lot more conversations like that than around like, oh, well, we can't do that. So,
right.
Yeah. I think that the only time that I've had trouble with the rate of change is because of our online conferences that we do.
Yeah.
Is that the software that we use is not updated fast enough. It's like it still has a traditional like 6 months to a year when they release a new version of it. And of course, web designers, developers always use the latest and they kind of traditionally flock to Chrome now. And so Chrome is like updated all the freaking time. And so our the software just does not work with Chrome.
Oh, really?
Because it's so cutting edge that we have to like tell people like, yeah, we're going to have to open up another browser.
And like, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool for that. But
I'm going to attest to that because I've even tried to have been like, oh, whatever, Chris, I'm just going to use Chrome, But it kind of works. So you should start telling people like, even though you think it kind of works, don't do it because it will bite you.
Yeah.
It'll
bite you in the butt pretty much.
Wow.
So yeah. But and then the other thing, my only sad story is that it's going to be really hard to tell people what version of Chrome it is when running books about web design. Just like,
yeah.
It's like, but that's just, I'd rather have the innovation than deal with that.
Yeah.
Like,
you might have to just switch to a different kind of way of referring to it because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I just call it Chrome. There's no version. I stripped out all the versioning in my book that's coming out because it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Because by the time,
except of course for IE and whatnot. But
yeah, by the time your book gets to the, gets in someone's hands, it's like two versions are updated already, probably. I don't know. So. It's like by the time you first write it, and like, oh, this is Chrome X, and then it's like Chrome X plus 2 by the time they get it. So, but yeah, it's crazy. Cool.
You can't. You have no choice as a Chrome user.
Yeah.
You want to maintain it? Maybe there's some crazy setting, but I don't think so. I think if you love Chrome 17, setting. That's just too bad.
Well, I will say like this is also, I'll probably wrap it up, but I just want to say I think this is the year of the preprocessor. I think that's like CSS preprocessing where.
Yeah.
CSS is really CSS 3 got too complex, and then CSS 3 CSS processor just kind of tamed it back in, I thought, and just it made lives easier. And then plus you get all the all the code kit is just freaking awesome. I think it's mm-hmm. just and be able to add everything like image optimization and sprites and all that stuff. I think it's just the way to go. So
it's cool. Interesting because those things have been around for a lot of years, and it's interesting.
Oh yeah, I will give a caveat that. Preprocessing like CodeKit is essentially because it has that GUI that designers like I can actually use it without being a lover of the command line. So that's a lot of programmers are. So, but I think this is a great way to end our look of the year in web. Thank you so much, Chris, for being on the show.
A great pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah. How can people find you on the internets?
I have the same username at everything. It's just my name. So Chris Coyer at Twitter and GitHub and stuff. Anything that where I might conceivably have that username, I do, including at gmail.com if you feel like emailing me.
Cool. And thanks to Aaron Walter and Greg Story for sending in their audio. And thanks to Chris from Canada from pushing the buttons behind the scenes. You can follow him on Twitter at iChris on your iDevice of choice. And also want to thanks Dave McFarlane for being my co-host for the year.
Yeah, awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And also want to say thanks to the listeners. It'd be great if you could rate us up on iTunes. It helps us get the word out about the show in addition to mentioning it on Twitter and Facebook. And as always, you can check out the show notes at nonbreakingspace.tv for all the links and sites discussed during the episode. And that's it. And happy and safe New Year, everyone. All right, here we go, and I'm going to totally mess this up. So, hey, Chris, how's it going?
What?
Oh, dude, damn. Hey. Thanks, Chris. Hey, how's it going, Dave? And And articulating, which is a great word to mess up on. Hello, and welcome to the Non-Breaking Space. Non-Breaking Space.
Future friendly.
Wood Type Revival, a successfully Kickstarter funded. Don't read it, just go live. Anyways, a successful. Matt.
Weep! Right. Ding! Hey, everyone, I got mail. Did you all hear that? Yeah.
This is a true story. I can't stress this enough. It's like my only good story I have.
I either checked you in at South by Southwest or I made out with you when I was drunk at the Adobe party.
Our guest for episode, we don't know what episode number this is.
I hope I didn't get that wrong. That got recorded.
When I was your age, we had to class everything by hand.
I mean, it's like, come on, CSS. Do we really should we be getting personal? Should we be like yelling and screaming at each other over this? Like, can't we all just have a beer?
Luckily, I had somebody beam the maps to my PDA.
One sec. I am literally about to hide inside a freight elevator inside a closet. This is what my life has come to.
You know, everything being done on the client side.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was my pausing for Christopher.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So sorry. I was just like, this will be edited out later on.
Never is, though.
Never is, though. Okay.